What's up, OUXers? Today, we're talking about Orca Sprints with Allie Ofisher, who is a UX consultant and certified OUX strategist. She's got a focus on information architecture and user research and, of course, Dr. Jordan UX. She helps organizations build shared understanding of their user needs through user research and works closely with teams to define and design the front-end architecture of digital systems. She's been an OUX mentor, I believe in cohort 7, also a speaker at OUX Happy Hour. She spoke last October on her experience running Orca Sprints with her clients. So today we're going to be digging into our individual experiences running Orca Sprints, facilitating, leading this work over the course of multiple days. But we're going to be talking about our individual experiences as well as our experiences together. So Allie and I ran an Orca Sprint a few weeks ago for the Church of Latter-day Saints. So we're going to be talking about our learnings from that experience and also how it might be different for the sprint we have coming up in a few weeks. So we've got some learnings that we want to share and also just things that we're going to change for different context. So a more teaching, getting stuff done sprint versus a getting stuff done because we need to prototype this thing. We are actually going to be on the hook to prototype it. So if you think running these Orca sprints sounds awesome, you'd be right. It is awesome. It's so much fun. But you haven't enrolled in the OUX masterclass yet. You gotta start there, y'all. You just gotta, okay? There is totally a very exciting growing market for this work, and companies are paying for it, all right? Here's the thing. Y'all have probably heard this before. You can have good or fast or cheap. Pick two. Okay, you can't have all three. So Orca Sprints gets you to very, very good design fast. And that is worth a ton. Okay. So an Orca Sprint is just, it's so packed with value and decisions can be made so much faster. Allie actually talks about this. And more effectively too, just avoiding a lot of rework, avoiding expensive miscommunications, and I tell you, more and more companies are seeing this. All right, so I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but I am not charging thousands of dollars for a one-week sprint. I am charging five figures for a one-week sprint. There is so much opportunity here to provide amazing value and to do it quick in a way that's actually super freaking fun. So if you want to run these or really any kind of OUX workshop, invest in the training that is going to make you a badass at this kind of problem solving. Go to OUX.com/masterclass to enroll and learn more and dig into all the details on what you get in this amazing package of training. And if your company is interested in investing in having me come run a sprint with you, go to rewiredux.com/contact. Then I will give you exact numbers. I have one, maybe two more openings this year in 2023 for Orca Sprints, and I would absolutely love to help you untangle complexity and get that amazing X-ray vision of the structure of your solution and also a roadmap as well. So especially if you have a lot of complexity, like I am looking to work with organizations that just have mind-boggling complexity and jumping in and helping y'all untangle it. And yeah, let's do it. Okay, so let's go ahead. Let's jump into this conversation with Allie Ofisher. I know you're gonna absolutely love this conversation. And we are also, we are also looking forward to continuing the conversation. So if you are not already a part of the OUX forum, please make sure, go ahead and create an account. It's forum.oux.com. And when you go to the bulletin board, you'll see a post about this conversation, as long as you're not, I mean, if you're listening to this like 6 months in the future or a year in the future, you're gonna have to do some scrolling or do a search or something to find it. But if you're listening to this somewhat real time, go to the bulletin board. You might have to scroll a little bit. We'll put the link in the show notes for the conversation. You can go there and we can continue the conversation. So Allie will be there. I'll be there. If you have questions about this, if you have comments or other ideas, we can continue the conversation over there in the forum. This has been something that kind of everybody talks about with podcasts, is that it's such an amazing form of content, yet often there's not a whole lot of interactivity. So we are changing that by making sure to post the podcast, posting it over in the forum and starting the conversation there. So if you want to join the convo, go over to forum.oux.com. You'll have to create an account. It's absolutely free. And then go find the bulletin board space. Pretty easy to find. And let's talk there. All right. Let's go talk to Allie. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Allie O. Fisher, welcome. Welcome to the OUX podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is going to be fun. I get excited about all my podcast interviews, but this one in particular, I'm very excited about because we have a workshop that we ran together that is kind of fresh in both of our minds that we're going to get into. And we're just going to get into Orca Sprints. So Orca Sprints is something that I started talking about last year. I read Jake Knapp's book and I recorded a podcast episode on it before I even ran any of them. I was like, this is cool. Y'all should do it. I'm going to try to do this. So before we get into it, can you, and maybe we do this together, but I'm interested to hear, how would you define an Orca Sprint and how is it different? Is it different than just an OUX workshop? Like what makes an Orca Sprint?
Yeah. Okay. So I think of an Orca Sprint is it's the timeline is it's a lot faster. And the ones I've done are usually across 2 weeks, but like ideally the one you talked about was like doing it in a short period of time, like a week, having everyone there in the room together and like really connecting just the context of each day. So going through objects, relationships, all of Orca, like through that week. And you just can make decisions really quickly in it is how I think about it. Not to say you can't make decisions when you draw out and do Orca over like a longer couple months or something like that. But having that group of people all together at once, day to day, your mind is just already thinking about what you did yesterday, which is something I really like.
But, yeah. And I actually I was preparing for our conversation and I was like, wait, what is actually the difference between these things? Which is so funny because I talk about that all the time. Like that's the number one question you're usually asking when you're doing that noun foraging and you're trying to figure out what the objects are is like, are these two things the same thing or are these different things? Like I'm like a broken record. And now I'm like, wait a second, what is the difference between the Orca Sprint and the OUX workshop? And I'm like, is it that I'm thinking like, yeah, there's OUX workshops that you might run over months or something. Like I think of like what Imogen Levy was doing at Moorfields Hospital and then the NHS. I mean, she was running OUX workshops over the course of like 3-4 months. And it was those, and I'm also thinking she was kind of like going through how we do the certification course, which is discovery. So doing the O, the R, the C, and the A, and really sticking with those discovery activities. I think that they spent a couple weeks on discovery and then moving into requirements and digging into requirements and then moving into prioritization. Or you might switch it and you might do discovery and then go into a prioritization round where you might spend a week or two on prioritization and then go into requirements. So you might spend a month, you know, running many OUX workshops. But an Orca Sprint, it's also that flip of instead of going by the rounds, discovery, requirements, prioritization, and then representation, you're going by the pillars. And you're really digging into the O on Monday or what, however it works out. And then you're digging into the R and you're doing a little sample platter of discovery and requirements and prioritization. All for the O and then all for the R, I should probably, the objects, the relationships, the CTAs and the attributes. So you're doing that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or in some compressed version where you're basically iterating and moving from pillars versus rounds.
Yeah. And you're like, so I just wrapped up doing a sprint last week, finished it out. And we ended up, what I love is that it really depends now how much time I spend on, like, you needed to spend a lot of time on object discovery, for example, like multiple days getting through what are these actual objects. And the prioritization was quick. It was really clear. And actually, we used our development team to like figure that out, really, like based on what we heard them saying. And then we're going to present it to them. So sometimes we definitely, like, depending on what the organization needed, we spent more or less time in each of those, not phases. What did you call them?
The
The different
pillars.
rounds, the pillars. Yeah.
Yes.
So like we did a lot more object discovery and call to action was really quick. There wasn't a lot of calls to action. So we just went right into like, here they are, quick, maybe a half hour, and then prioritize them. It was very easy and something we could go through. But relationships and objects are a little more tricky, and we had to spend a little bit more time on the discovery part of it.
Yeah, it's that kind of like that flexibility of it. I also wonder, like getting into like teaching versus doing. Like a lot of my early OUX workshops were I was teaching OUX. And the way to teach OUX, I still believe, is by round. So teach discovery first, because it's a walk before you run, right? Like you can, there's no way I can like dig deep into requirements until I've taught discovery. Right. So that's how the certification works. We go through discovery, then we go through requirements, then we go through prioritization. We do it round by round. And yeah, like if I'm teaching it, I would do like a day of discovery when I can condense it before I came up with the and release the certification. It was like in the masterclass, it was like, okay, let's do a day of discovery, then let's say do a day of requirements, and then I'll teach prioritization, like if you want a 3-day teaching workshop. Right. And but then like if you're actually doing it, it's less about the teaching. Like you really want like at least a loose object guide before you go into relationships, like just like basic definitions. Like let's make sure we're really clear on these things before we move on. So from a it's like from a teaching perspective versus a doing perspective, it's different.
That absolutely is. And that's where we got stuck on. Like the definitions and the terms we were using, we kept going back and forth and needed more time to figure out, wait, what are those before we could get into figuring out how they relate to one another. So we
Yeah.
needed more, like, okay, let's go back and look at some things. Let's get more interview notes. Let's figure this out first before, which, definitely pushed the timeline around. It wasn't the maybe as clean cut as you can be in a training workshop. You can be like, okay, these are the objects, even if you have not an example project, right? You've always done, when you're doing more training, is it more so like with an example project versus that domain? Like if it's a group, like
Yeah.
let's talk about, yeah,
I mean,
LBS.
that is like that. So this is something that when I first started running the training workshops, I'd be like, let's just take a problem that you're working on right now and we'll run that through the ringer and you'll learn it and you'll also get stuff done. And I did that, I don't know, like 3 or 4 workshops. And it was just, we would, it was good, but it was also like, we would just, the client would always have a lot of baggage around their current design challenge that they were working on, whether it was like for a client, for their client, or something they were working on internally. And it was hard to get through the teaching because all the gotchas were coming up, so we kept like getting pulled down little rabbit holes. And so I started, I mean, years ago, like this was like 2016 or something. I was like, no more, no more. There was always going to be an example design challenge. I want it to be like, it's not even in your domain. Like, we're going to come up with like, oh, you're in security. Okay, we're going to do something with e-commerce. And I would kind of try to pick a design challenge that had like similar patterns, maybe that what they would be working on. But I was like, no, I'm not going to teach it with something that you're working on. And I say that in the master class and in the certification too. You used to be able to do custom design challenges. And I'm like, no, unless you're getting recertified, no custom design challenges, because it's hard to learn while you were actually solving the problem. That said, what did we do with the Latter-day Saints? We did a combination, and now I'm loving it. And I'm like, I'm actually curious, so what we did with when we went out to Salt Lake City and we ran this amazing workshop with the Mormons, we basically OUX their organization and their religion. I mean, It was mind blowing. But that was, they wanted to learn it. And I pitched them because I'd been doing these Orca sprints with Autodesk. And I pitched them. I was like, what if we did, instead of this 3-day training that you thought you bought and that was going to be with an example design challenge, what if we did this Orca sprint and we integrated training into the Orca sprint? And it worked. I think it worked. And I'm actually like, I'm wondering, is it because I've become a better facilitator? Like, I can do that now. We can kill two birds with one stone. Or I'm also curious, is because we took a level up, and we didn't say, hey, we're gonna redesign your genealogy app, or we're gonna redesign your they have, like, apparently I learned during the workshop, they do a lot of, like, they have like a whole app for their like shipping and trucking and like moving materials around. I'm like, but we didn't go and be like, okay, we're gonna redesign that. We took it that level up and we said, we're not even thinking about your screens. We're not even thinking about actual apps. We are applying OUX to your domain. Yeah. Any thoughts on that? On just like integrating training into an Orca sprint, or any like trying to do the two things at once, where you're training and you're trying to get something done.
Yeah, I mean, what was fascinating. So, the first Orca sprint I did was with a university organization. It was a philanthropic idea app, right? And the stakeholder, so it was with one stakeholder from their group and one engineer. She was a rock star. Like, I wasn't even training any of it. I was just going through explaining just enough that they needed to know to do it. And she took it and ran with it and is now has a new idea for a new app that she's using and figured out how to use the Orca process with it. So it was really interesting that I think there is this level of, no matter what, it's a process, and it's a process that you can really pick up on and like understand and use it in another domain really easily. So even if we're not intentionally training someone or teaching it, you can start to put the pieces together going through something like a sprint when you have a facilitator who's kind of guiding you through. And so I guess where I'm going is that I think they really fit nicely together. Even if it's not an intentional training, you can just really see, like, oh, okay, thinking about a domain or an idea and objects and learning that process and going through, okay, what are the relationships? Like, it's really beautiful. But yeah, when I'm thinking back to LDS, there was definitely, they just did so well at thinking high level domain agnostic. Or I'm sorry, system agnostic with any of the apps. And I always thought,
Screen
like, when we get,
agnostic.
yeah, like I thought when we get to those NAF flows, that that might be the sticking point of, like, wait a minute, what are we designing? Like, what are we creating here? But even that, because, and I don't know if you want to talk about, like, how we kind of, we broke up them up into little teams, and they had their own little, they had their own goals, right? That was really powerful. I'll let you explain that. But they were able to do amazing nav flows and think about it, even though it wasn't for a specific system. And I think that was the test there. We had a little experiment and we were like, no, you can do this and learn
Oh
how
my
to
gosh,
do it.
all the LDS people listening. Yes, we did lots of experiments on you. I hope you don't mind. I'm glad you brought up, you said we like just you use the word just enough, the words just enough. You said just enough. And there is a book that I recommend all the time. Allie, have you read Badass Making Users Awesome by Kathy Sierra?
I have not, but it's on my list. I have
Oh
it
my
like
gosh.
reserved at the library. Do I
Move
need
it
to
up to
get
the top. Move it up to the top of your everybody that it's, if it's on your list or not on your list, put it on your list, put it to the top of your list. It is one of my favorite books, not just about UX, but also learning, just learning in general. And she talks about this like just in time learning. You need to present the information just enough to get the thing done, to go and practice it just enough. And that's what the Orca, this like training Orca sprint does. And the thing also that I that helped with LDS is we had 40 people in the room. 20 of them had done an OUX workshop with me in November, so like 4 or 5 months prior. I think everybody in the room had read the launch guide, so or pretty much everybody had like listened to the podcast. So there was like some prep work, right? So it wasn't like that group was completely new. to OUX, they had done a little bit of prep work. So they were able, I think, to get there faster. And we were able to have a lot of success with that. But when it's a client, right? Like with the workshop that we've got coming up, right? We've got a workshop hopefully coming up, fingers crossed it comes through, with a large healthcare system. And it is, we are designing an app. Like Allie and I are actually on the hook for a prototype afterward. So very different. It's not necessarily about the training. We are going in there like, I hate to use the term ninjas. We're going in there like just we're dropping in Mission Impossible style, but it's not gonna be impossible because we got an Orca Sprint. So we're dropping in. We've got 2.5 days with them to figure this thing out and to be able to then sketch the thing and design the thing and deliver a prototype. So that training is definitely, it's going to be that just enough. We just need to train them enough so that they can participate and they can get involved. And then if they, want to dive deeper and they want to learn more and somebody wants to be like, become an OUXer, then they've got the master class there for them.
I love that. That's the difference. It is the training just enough so they can participate. Like you need to, as a facilitator, depending on the, if you're doing a sprint with an organization who wants to, like that is interested in learning the process, or they just, the focus is on creating something that we're going to prototype and take to the next development level. They still need to know a little bit about the process so that they can participate. And I love that. And so there is this little bit. You can't just throw someone in and be like, okay, come up with the objects. Wait, what objects? What are objects?
What are objects?
What do you mean by objects? What are objects that are in my system now? Like you need some
Buttons.
training in there.
L. Yeah. So if we go through it, let's talk through. This is not where I thought this was gonna go, but like, what do you think for the O, the R, the C, and the A? Let's start with the O. Like, what are the most important things? Like, how long do we need to spend with people? What have you done to train them up just enough so that they can participate?
Oh, great question. So the one I did, and I stole this from our LDS workshop, is did some pre-noun foraging. I did it ourselves. Me and our content strategist at Pixo, we looked through all of their stuff to figure out what are some example objects and gave them. So we did that as a head start because what I found was I wasted a lot more time on that first day when I had them do some noun foraging. So when we had a tight timeline, it was just harder to have them kind of go through that and learn how to do that. So I did have them noun forage their brains for what they thought the terms were, and that's something we you and I used, and come up with some objects you think are in this domain. So this was an educational domain. It's an organization that helps students, helps foster student success through like their cradle to career in Texas, and they provide strategies to like educators and school districts, and they have all this content. They have a lot of content, a lot of information heavy stuff. So that first of like giving them, okay, here are some of the nouns. Now choose which ones you think are most vital, like how to explain your organization, your domain, and start prioritizing those. I also think doing an object guide is necessary. Going through the practice of defining the purpose instances was a huge thing. We found out they only had like four services, and that made me question, is service right now an object, or is service going to be something later on that's going to grow? So needing that object guide, to me, that was like, I will always do that. That's something I found. I don't know, what comes to mind for you in that object round?
I mean, I think that like I'm going back to Kathy Sierra too, like doing the pre-noun foraging so that they already have examples of objects. And Kathy Sierra talks about this. She's one of the best ways to learn is to see it done right. So to literally model it, to be like, here's the objects that we come up with, and they'll see like we're not talking about calendar pickers and buttons and homepage cards. Like we're talking about actual concepts. So they have all these examples. But I think like they really, the thing, if you have 10 minutes to train somebody up on like if they need to noun forage their own brain, it's given some examples. So do it for, I think what we did is we always do like national park or something. Okay, so you're planning a visit to the national park. What objects come up? And then have people say it. And then you can have learning moments where people say something like price. And you're like, what? Well, price is just price. Is that actually information or an attribute about something else? Because price is meaningless on its own. Like it's a price of something, right? So then you can have that learning moment when they go astray. But having those, that pre-noun foraging and then SIP, like teaching them like structure, instances, and purpose. Like, can you name some attributes about that thing? What does it actually have structure? Does it have instances? Can you actually come up with some example instances? And does it have purpose? Like, does it, what is the reason for it to be here? So teaching them SIP, giving good examples, you can do that in 10 minutes, then have them noun forge their brain and talk about it as a group and say like, okay, what'd you come up with? What did you come up with? And then kind of having the teaching moments as they come up.
Yep. And the one thing I didn't do, and I think this is where it relies on the facilitator, and I wasn't training them on, but I went and consolidated them. So I looked at their list and said, ooh, actually, that one that we spent a lot of time talking about, that's actually an attribute on this. It's not, it's under this other object. But I didn't spend too much time. I explained it quickly why, but I didn't spend in-depth amount of time explaining why to them. And I think a lot of that is the trust that they had. They knew we were the experts in it and we're the ones that were going to help them figure this out. So that might be a little difference where you would probably spend more time explaining that if you were training a group of people more so how to do this later.
Of course. Yeah. So that you could be giving them the teaching them to fish versus
Yeah.
giving them the fish. But
Yeah.
yeah, going in and just being like, ah, like that's probably an attribute. And usually people aren't going to argue. We had the really interesting one come up for LDS on Jesus Christ and
Yep.
whether Jesus Christ is an object or an instance. And I love this story so much because it was like they were like kind of philosophically and emotionally wanted Jesus Christ to be an object because Jesus Christ is so important in their religion, right? Like the reason for it, right? So, but to me, because we have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and something called a Godhead entity, we basically had to coach them through the fact that what we have is we have an object of Godhead entity with exactly three instances: the Father,
Yes.
the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And so sometimes you'll just have to have these examples. And you know, having doing it through going back to like doing it through a specific design challenge versus just OUXing the domain, there is some real cool advantages with just OUXing the domain because then you get into those kind of conversations. The examples will come up where you can have those teaching moments, but it's going to be so specific to what that group is actually dealing with.
Yes.
Okay, so R.
Okay, relationship. So, all right. I have this hot take. I've been trying to do the system models, and maybe this is because I've been doing all of my sprints remote, not in person. And I did see when we were in Salt Lake City with LDS doing them in person, which is something I just hadn't done in so long. It is really powerful to just sketch those out and just draw the arrows. So this little system models, I would start with that, and I realized I was losing everyone in the room because they just weren't sure. Wait, what are we doing here? So what I found to be really helpful now is I just pull up that we just focus in on one object and I say, okay, let's pull one. How does this relate? Almost taking just that column of the nested object matrix, focusing in on that. And sometimes I need to sketch to the side a little example wireframe and be like, this is what I mean by relationship. Like, if we're looking at a page that's describing a service, there will be example data that like support that service or in articles that talk about successes of that service underneath and like show them a little example and talk through it. I found that to be most helpful when going through it.
Yeah, like really, I think that they need to understand what is a nested object and they need to see it. They actually do need to see it on a screen. So I
Yes.
do have that in my presentation, or you could do a little sketch on a whiteboard if you're in person to just really show this is, it's almost like you're jumping ahead to the nav flow just a little bit, just to
Exactly.
show like, okay, I'm on a core belief detail page, and this is how a Godhead entity instance might show up on a core belief detail page.
Yes.
Something like that, right? So yeah, I think really showing them how, like, what is a nested object? Do you get into, and how does a nested object actually manifest in a screen to show that this is, there's relationships. The R of Orca is the abstract word for a nested object, basically. Nested object is just how it manifests. So seeing that manifestation, I think, is important. Okay, if you are interested in running Orca Sprints, but you haven't yet enrolled in the OUX Masterclass, you gotta go get that training. Seriously, if you love this podcast, if you've been taking some intro courses on OUX, if you've read all the articles, now is the time. Your career deserves this. If you're trying to facilitate OUX with just the free materials, which, yes, I give a ton of those away, you are missing out, though. You will hit roadblocks when the design challenge calls for some advanced relationship modeling or conditional logic. And this is the only place, this OUX masterclass, this is the only place you're going to learn those advanced techniques that you're going to want to be able to identify when you need those during these workshops. This is where you're going to learn about nav flows. This is where you're going to learn about the object guide. And this is where you're going to learn all the super strategic prioritization techniques that you absolutely need to run an Orca workshop. I just had a cohortian from cohort 8 say, OUX is decommodifying UX, which I love that, and that is so true. And how is that happening? Well, y'all, this shit is hard. Untangling complexity is hard, okay? And not anyone can do it. It's not for everybody, okay? And hard stuff actually requires real professional training. And you can start that training today. Just go to OUX.com/masterclass. The course is only $9.97, an investment that will serve you for your entire career, an investment that will pay for itself over and over and over again, especially if you get some gigs running some Orca workshops, right? The next certification is not until October of 2023, and you don't want to wait that long to get started going through this material. So, go ahead, get started now. You're going to be the first in line to upgrade to a spot in cohort 9. So that's OUX.com/masterclass. Okay, let's go get back to our conversation with Allie. What about cardinality?
Ooh, yeah, that just comes out in conversation. I explain it. I'm like, okay, this is how what cardinality means and how we'll talk about it. And actually, I found people really get that. They're like, yep. And now maybe it's because I'm working a lot with organizations and I'm working with developers. But even our stakeholders, how many does this have? And I'm usually the one just typing it out. Like I'm listening to what they're saying and I'm filling in the blanks when doing this. I find that to be most efficient. So I'm having them talk about, okay, in the real world, do you normally have data associated with a service? Yeah. Okay. Is there a lot of data? Okay. Yeah. Well, will there always be data? Oh no, not it. And they're giving me examples of it. They're going through in their minds. Okay. Let me think of that example. Does that have that? And so then I'm almost just pre-filling that out. And those conversations then really help fill in that nav flow. I mean, that's the power piece, I think, of R, is looking at the nav flow with everyone. That's when things start to really click too, but I'm jumping ahead a little.
Yeah. But wait, time out for a second. Pause. Is data an object in this new... Yes.
In this new system, data is an object. So for example, it has a name, it has a source, it has an infographic, is okay. Like the piece of data. It's usually like a bar chart or something. And it's describing like demographics. So this school district, how did students, which students excelled in math at if they had this Algebra 1 course. And they use that data to describe, how is this a focus area? Like, why are we looking to improve this? So it's really the why behind if this organization is going to be focusing on student success, like different, focus areas inside of it. So it did become an object.
is it one of those supporting objects? Like, because it's like talking about, is it a data widget, right? That might be on a dashboard or something, but might float around. Okay.
Yes. But it's also, they have a whole tool where someone can go in and search the data and find it. And so they need it to be, it is like in context of their main website, it'll be in context of like a page just supporting content. Like if you had an image or a video or something like that, but it has structure. Yeah. But they also need it in this other database where someone can search and find 2021, what was the demographics for this school district compared to this other school district? And then they would find and see it too. So it needs to be searchable, have all of those nice filters and everything to find it. There's a lot.
Interesting. Okay. So nav flows.
Yes.
So that was with LDS, that was the first time I taught nav flows live in person. And it totally worked. We gave people markers. We flipped the color coding on them. We didn't have to flip color coding because we were only with blue sticky notes, because what we're doing is to catch everybody up, we've figured out, we've done our pre-noun foraging. We've consolidated the nouns. We've gotten groups to their nouns. We've written a little bit of an object guide, at least definitions. Actually, let's go back to the object guide just for a moment, because I want to talk about that. We're skipping around a little bit. So back to the object guide. This is kind of like the end of the day on Monday for the archetypical Orca sprint. You're getting that object guide together, which we focused on instances and definitions. Are there any other pieces of the object guide that you really like to bring in? Because, I mean, in our object guide template, we've got like 8 different sections to an object guide.
Yeah, I really like the other labels, the synonyms. We needed that to be able to see, because there were so many discrepancy between terms. And the purpose also really helped. Like, why does this matter? And I had them do that on their own, like after some homework. But I think that was really helpful for me to see, to help consolidate, to understand it more.
So one thing I want to bring into our next sprint that we didn't do for LDS, and that I don't even have in the object guide now, because it's more of an attribute, but I think it's a really important attribute that throws people off, and that is type. And going in, because also people get mixed up with type versus instance. I'll say, give me some instances of an artist, and they'll be like sculptor, painter, watercolor. And I'm like, no, those are types of artists. Instances of an artist is going to be, you know, Picasso, Maya Lin, whoever, actual people. So like specifically to, well, for many reasons, one, to differentiate the difference, to show, illustrate the difference between instances and types. And also we, specifically with that workshop, and this does come up with other workshops too, but level of specificity really became a thing, right? Can you think of an example where level of specificity, where they were like, which level were they at? Oh my gosh.
I feel like the back group had this a lot.
Yes.
I'm trying to think
Richard had lots of questions on levels of specificity. Ah, okay. I've got one. So when it comes back to level of specificity, so document was an object, and they had types for like, is it a journal entry? Is it a standard work, right? Is it like, what kind of document is it? So it was like, is journal entry an object, or is document the object and document that has type? Another example is event. So is event the object? What level of specificity do we get to? Or do we drill down and we make, for this one was with history, like a battle, a birth, a revelation event that happened. So does battle become an object, and birth become an object, and revelation event become an object? Or do we say we've got an event object that has type? So that's the reason why I'm thinking like it would have been really helpful with LDS if we had gotten into type and had them define type earlier on, like while we were doing the object guide.
Yes. And the difference here, I don't know if everyone understood this, like each group had their own focus area and was a little different. They had a different set of objects. Some overlapped, yes, though. So I also wonder, I mean, how did you like that? I'm thinking like we might have had that conversation if everyone was doing the same one with it. But it was really cool how that did come up, even though they had different objects. Like there were definitely that sparked in many,
yes,
of those
because
groups.
Some would have different levels of specificity depending on their focus. Okay. Yes. So the other fun experiment that we ran on LDS was actually having, because we had this large group, we did want to integrate training as well. We had 40, 45 people and all of these objects. I mean, our noun foraging, we came up with 120 objects or something like that. And so what we did is we came up with theme areas with our main organizer. So one was family history. There was another, a mission was a theme area. Core beliefs and behaviors was a theme area. Record keeping and documentation was a theme area. And so then they basically had to drill down from those 120-ish objects plus the objects that when they noun forged their brain around that particular theme, and they had to drill it down to 5 objects, which was tough. But yeah, and then they had that kind of, so one theme where like, if it's record keeping, maybe you break out document more and you get down to that level of detail and that level of specificity. But another, if it's history, maybe document is the object. Yeah. And not those different types. So we're getting into inheritance and object basis here, but
but was beautiful about that when they brought it all together is that you could see, well, document does have, in certain contexts, needs that level of specificity. And in other contexts, it might not. But when you think about document as a whole, you need to think of all those contexts that it might be show up in their organization. I think that's a beautiful way to figure out, like, what does document need to look like to be consistent? And so that this siloed group over in the record keeping part of the organization is thinking about and talking about documents in the same way as the historical context or, a different area of the organization.
And you could potentially even start seeing, like, if you have one group that has split it out into three different objects and another group that just has it as document, you can start seeing that inheritance, right? That, like, okay, we probably need a object base, and then and you basically this group over here, y'all have modeled that object base, and now we have where, battle versus birth, maybe there's slightly different attributes, right? So then we can start seeing that inheritance come up. Yeah. Okay. So skipping ahead, so we've got an object guide. We go to Tuesday, if you will. We'll just stick with the archetypical sprint, which never actually happens like this. But we go to Tuesday. We have basics on cardinality. We've showed examples. We're walking through a nested object matrix. We maybe do some system modeling. Do some prioritization. So we make them prioritize the nested object matrix, basically. This can be done with dot voting. How have you done prioritization before getting into Navflows?
Definitely dot voting. This has been a hard one to do with, I feel like, so one system we worked on was an invoicing app and it needed everything. It was so hard to get them to prioritize because it was a, replacing a system that they, it was like integral to their business. They needed everything. So I had a really hard time getting them prioritized, even just for like coming down to an MVP. But then when I was working on the first sprint I did was with that philanthropic, like an idea app, they wanted just a beta version. She was wonderful at just cutting down and prioritizing. So I think I've had to just read the room and see how good, like what is going to work. Dot voting, definitely. Sometimes I just through conversation, I'm starting to move them up and say, like, okay, we're going to remember, let's focus on these for now. These seem like the most important ones, just to get us to keep going. And then I always have them there and document them in our object map and Notion so that we can go back to and they can actually prioritize later when we're thinking about estimates and building it out.
I mean, even if you can't cut any nested objects, you still have to decide which nested objects are going to show up the page and which nested objects might be farther down the page. So if you, but that doesn't necessarily need to happen in like the first round of a nav flow, right? You potentially could just go straight into the nav flow. So have you done a nav flow with a group?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
How'd it go? Oh, remotely too.
Remotely.
Oh
So
my
this is the
gosh.
thing. I always like to prep it, but what I've been thinking about doing, and it actually, when we were doing it in person, what got me excited was like, could I make all the puzzle pieces? So I always think about like, okay, I actually don't do the top level navigation just because I'm not sure. I don't want them to think that that's what it's going to be yet. But I start with, okay, we have listing pages, then we have the detail pages, and then I'll just have a little key of those like colored square of all of our objects in the different colors. And I keep thinking like this is we could just have like printed out versions. I know you and I talked about this for like reusable or something. But what I do is then sometimes I'll be with them or sometimes I prep a little bit like the first page and I just say, okay, like let's talk through how does this one, will this one be on the page? This is kind of where the conversations happen around priority too, because they see the page. So we have like a focus area page on this recent one. It was like, okay, the focus area is early learning. What would be on that page? Would you need data on that page? Yes. Okay. How much data do you typically have? Okay, 2 to 3. And then we'd have featured articles or featured resources and link off. And I'm starting to build that one page and then they're seeing how it connects to other pages. And then it clicks. I find that to be such a beautiful moment because they can see, oh, okay. Oh, cool. Yeah, we want that on that page too. And oh, that makes sense over there. And that'll link over to that page. So sometimes it's in conjunction with them. I'm usually the one, I use Miro and I'm the one moving things around as they're talking again. I've had the most success, mostly because we just have a limited amount of time. So even though they're in Miro with me, they're not as much doing the work. I found it to be just a lot. I'm having them focus on the knowledge and the domain and bringing context to what we're building out.
So how many people do you have in, like, if it's just a conversation that you're facilitating and you're the one moving the pieces around, what's like the ideal number of people to have?
Oh, ideal. Like this last one, I think we had five stakeholders on their end, and then we had four of us consultants on Pixo's end. So that was like a developer, content strategist, project manager, me, and they had their communications team. So yeah, what is that? Like about 10 people we had in there. That seemed really good. And I always worry that people are just like the more people, the more they might get lost or are like, wait, where are we? What are we doing? So I like keeping it small. But it really depends because I had another one where it was just two stakeholders and it was just all of our Pixo team because we were going to be the ones building it and engineering it. I definitely like smaller for remote though. Having, I don't know, we could not have done 40 people like LDS. That needed to be in a room. And yeah, but
And
even then
that's
we broke them
you need
down.
groups, right? You need to break it
Yes.
down into groups. And then if you're breaking down into groups, you need to make them do it, right? Unless you
Yeah.
have a facilitator for every single group, then that's great. But then you're basically running mini workshops.
Mini workshops. So how did you do it with Autodesk though? And like how did that,
It
yeah,
was,
what's your ideal?
it was like 13 people. It was around there where we're solving the problem. We're all in one group. And once you, I mean, we did a little bit of breakout. So to get to our objects for the first sprint, we broke it out into groups. And then we basically lined up everybody's 10 prioritized objects. So we had like five groups and we saw basically how many votes each object got. Like if only one team had this in their top 10, like, sorry, like it was
Yes.
like if three teams had it in their top 10, then okay, let's move forward with this. Or if they would be synonyms, right? Like you put design and you put model, like let's talk. Like, are those the same things? Are those different things? And then we would kind of come together and consolidate it down to we had for those Autodesk sprints, we had an entire week. So we were trying to stick to like that 10-ish objects. I think we ended up having 12 objects. But some of the objects were ju we just tackled as nested objects. We didn't actually tackle the column. So that's
Yeah.
the other thing of like, oh, you know, when I'm teaching and I'm in the master class, I'm like, there's no such thing as just a nested object. But in an Orca sprint, you might say, like, this is an object. It's going to be an object. We're just not going to create a column. It's just going to be a nested object row. Hey y'all, Sophia from the future interrupting just for a moment because I've got some really exciting news. I have five new OEUX strategists to congratulate who have just taken the test, passed the test with flying colors from cohort 8 of the OEUX certification program. We're going to have a lot more people rolling in from cohort 8, but these are just the first five that went ahead and took the test in the first week of the testing window. So I want to congratulate first Richard Gower, who is a full lifecycle developer and product manager based in Texas. I want to congratulate Maya Schmidt, who is a UX designer based in Germany. Stone Sagala, a UX designer based in Utah. Alex Davidson, a digital product designer based in Ukraine. And Molly Lintz, a UX designer who is based in Wisconsin. So thank you to all of them for all of their absolutely amazing hard work. And I just want to note a couple little things that those folks said about the certification program. So Molly said it's one of the best things that she's ever done to further her growth in the digital world. Stone said, and I quote, "I have been equipped with tools and knowledge that will help me become a better designer no matter what field I'm a designer for. This program is one of the best designed I have ever attended." Stone, I'm so glad. Thank you so much. Alex said, as a seasoned designer, I've attended my fair share of UX courses, but I can confidently say that this course has transformed the way I approach complex design projects in a way no other course has. It has been nothing short of a paradigm shift for me. I cannot recommend this UX course highly enough. Whether you are a novice designer looking to gain a solid foundation in UX design principles, or a seasoned professional seeking to elevate your skills and approach to complex projects, this course is a must. Alex, thank you so much. That is an amazing testimonial. Richard says, I have used object-oriented practices for analyzing, defining, and developing applications since the 90s, but I have never had such a detailed methodology to document and communicate findings and to easily prioritize a release strategy. The certification course is run and supported by people with such a passion for the process that it is easy to have fun, even though it is a challenging course. I had a blast in the course, and I made a number of long-term friendships that I hope will result in successful collaborations. That is amazing, Richard. And I absolutely love hearing how people are connecting and making these long-term relationships. And Maya says, this is the missing piece to the puzzle that is UX. And I feel that way too, Maya. So those are just a couple snippets from testimonials that were actually a whole lot longer. I was picking and choosing here. And just one of the themes from everybody that talks about this course that makes it through or doesn't make it through is this is a really difficult course. Come into this course to be challenged, okay? This is a zero fluff course, all right? We get to the heart of complexity, and dealing with complexity is difficult. But step by step, we show you how to take it on so that when you come on the other side of this course, you are not shying away from any complexity. You are saying, bring it on. I will be the person on the team to be the one to really tackle it and to tackle it with such grace and elegance. So hope to see you in the masterclass. And like I said, the next certification does not start until October of 2023, but you can go ahead. You can get started on the material today. All you got to do is enroll in the OUX masterclass. You'll get all the templates. You'll get all the course material. You'll get all 22 hours of the video. And then when you're ready to join the certification in October, if you choose to go that path, you will be one of the first to know to get your seat. All right, let's go back to our conversation with Allie. Okay, let's move, because I want to keep moving. I'm like, my sense of my desire for completion is strong here. The C of Orca. We're on Wednesday, or probably yeah. Wednesday afternoon, because the nested object matrix took so long and you spill the nested object matrix into Tuesday. So it's Wednesday afternoon and you're ready to do the CTA matrix. What do you need to teach people? What is that just enough information?
I think the distinction between roles and audiences came up for us, and really getting that narrowed down. Sometimes it's easy to pick out what the roles are going to be. But I definitely, there were some teaching moments of like, what's a role versus what's an audience? Permissions. Oof. If you have a system that has permissions, I feel like there could be a lot of teaching in that, because this could get into some, even maybe it's just got to be outside of the sprint. That's what I found with when we had to get permissions. It's like, there's just a whole another world of requirements to gather about that.
And I think also with permissions, it's like, I also just think that OUX and the Orca sprint isn't mature enough. Like, I think that I see a day where we will be able to tackle that, you know, in an afternoon, or if we do give the Sea of Orca its full day, right? We just haven't designed the tools yet to really get into permissions, because the big piece of permissions is these object relative roles, which you have like, okay, we've got the role, we've got the user, we've got the admin, and we've got a super admin. Great. Easy. But then once you get into let's going back to LDS, a mission is an object. Okay, you've got the mission director, you've got people that are on the mission, and then you've got people that are not on the normal people that are not on the mission, right? How does that change permissions on the mission object? And even objects inside of the mission, because missions can have documents, they can have locations. So that becomes a whole other bag of worms that we just really, I just don't think we're mature enough to be able to tackle that. I mean, has that ever come up, these like object relative permissions?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this invoicing software we did, it just really depended like who was looking at it. Like there were individual barns, actual barns that had pigs, and they all had different permissions, and they had strong rules around like, we want these people to see this and update the prices, but they don't need to see the invoices because they're not touching that part. And it's like, okay, got it. So there, you know, there's just a lot. I definitely think the objects helped have those conversations. I think it would have, I don't know how we would have gotten there around permissions without starting at that, like, okay, who needs to see this and why? And okay, what's their level? Do they need to see these other things and why? So when they log in, what is their view of the system for someone else's? And we just had to like sketch that out. I would love to see what that future, yeah, if we need some more training around that, I
Yeah,
guess, or like.
just really figuring out and like more practice, I think. We'll see. It might come up with our healthcare app, and maybe we just do a little bit of brainstorming, like how could we do that to where we have these system level roles, but then we almost have like a CTA matrix inside of a CTA matrix where you have these, you're just thinking about the one object and potentially the objects inside or the nested objects inside of that particular instance of that object. How does that change? Like going back to the missions, if you're the mission director, or I'm making up roles here, but like if you're a mission director, I'm assuming that there's some sort of mission president or mission director, and then there's the people that are on the mission, but then there might also be other like leadership positions within the mission. Not only how does that affect your create, update, delete ability on the mission, but the training materials inside the mission and the events inside of the mission. Right. So it turns into a fractal, a little bit of a CTA matrix. What about, I think, what about like weak versus strong CTAs? Do you even get into that?
I do a little like general, hey, this is what they are, but I'm usually just kind of watching for it. And I'll say, okay, great, you came up with that one. That one is not one. Like, that's okay, you know. But I do like to give, because definitely there are some people in like these organizations do want to learn how to, they're going to be using this. Like the object map is their deliverable to figure this out. I always say, even if we're not building this for you, or if we have phase it out, you know, you need to understand this too. And I think it's through seeing it. As soon as you start to see and brainstorm some of them, it becomes clear, like, oh, okay, that's, you know, those are just the stronger calls to action, and they can kind of get on that right path of thinking through them.
And if they have the, you know, if it comes up that you want to view the thing or read the thing or filter by the thing or
Yes,
something like that, it's fine. Just like, you know, like let them put it on there.
it's
Okay, so the A of Orca, the actual object map, the deliverable.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing to have an object map as a deliverable? What do we need to teach them? Do you get into core content versus metadata?
Absolutely. I definitely do. But that's another one where, like, I'm more interested in them just describing what makes up this. I can change, and I always tell them, don't worry about that. I'm going to explain it to you, but like, if you put it on a red, a you know, yellow sticky note, a resin, like, don't worry about it. I'll change them. Like, we'll get through that in requirements, is how I like to think about it. I'm just like, let's come up with what, how I'm looking to understand how big are these objects? Like, what, how. How much structure do they have? And that kind of can help me understand. So we had a great conversation where we looked at one object, our team internally on Friday after the Orca Sprint was done, and we're like, this doesn't need to be an object. We can combine these. So it was actually an article. We had an article that they use it for news and these success stories. And we're like, okay, an article is a good, it like encompasses both. But an event, they actually don't have a lot of events. So we looked at the object guide, very little number of events per year. So we're like, maybe we could have an article, at least for now, support an event and link off to something like Eventbrite. But it can have the name of it. It can, you know, maybe it has a type. It's a type of article as an event or something like
And it
that.
just
Maybe
gets
we
a
call
date
it.
and time and an external
Exactly.
link. Little
Yes.
conditional, do some combining, some offloading, little conditional logic.
Yes. So that's where I like to, I'm like, just explain what it is and let's get it out there. And then let's really like, yeah, kind of tweak it around and see what we can combine and make sense of it. Especially if we're dealing with scope, a small scope or something, trying to get to like, what is that MVP version of this? So I like really in attributes, I'm like, just as much like what makes us up, find some examples, do some like attribute foraging on some current things that they have. I don't know what comes to mind
Okay.
for you.
So
Yeah.
you do actually do some attribute foraging, like bring up current screens and
Yeah.
start kind of like just you do like brass tacks, you like bring screenshots into Miro
Yep.
and start putting your sticky notes on top.
Yep. And I'll sometimes like have them, yeah, definitely this system we did for, yeah, I had to bring in screenshots and I gave them like, okay, 20 minutes, just kind of go around and find all the things. And I may add our internal team do this before too to prep as well. Or I'll just do it as well. And then I'll confirm it with them. So I'm like, okay, I filled this out. Now let's talk through these. Is this still relevant? Like a lot of sometimes when we're redoing a very old, outdated system, it's like a lot of the stuff on there was not relevant anymore. So we were cutting the fat on it. We were like, okay, we
Yes,
don't need
love
this,
that.
we don't need this. But I started with what they had. And then they added things too. They're like, oh, we need this on there. We need this on there. So that's a really, if you can do some prep before, can be helpful.
For sure. I think about like so with the object map and getting them to kind of understand the object map, do you help them visualize like what is a column in the object map? Like you kind of do with the nested objects, right? To be like, let me sketch this out. Do you ever kind of like show, because I feel like in the slides that I lean on a lot is that animation that I have in Keynote where
Yes.
it actually shows a column in the object map. Like that's a great magic move animation in Keynote where it shows it turning into cards, and then it shows like, okay, the lower priority information gets on the detail page, and then you have these lists. So like showing how you turn the corner from an object map into cards, details, and lists. Do you show them any of
Yes.
that?
I stole that exact thing from you because it's so powerful. It
Wonderful.
cl I see their like their minds just going, "Wait, what is the yellow and the red and the green?" And then they see it. I can take an example and show them these are the things, and this goes into the car, and this goes, and then it just clicks. So I do think, yeah, showing that is helpful. And especially when I'm making little sketches that are just all the colors, you know, my little sketches, and they're like, wait, what are the colors or what does this mean? And it's like, oh, okay, remember, like this is what it's going to look like that eventually. And you that it's a really
So you bring
powerful.
the color coding over into your
Yeah.
sketches so they can
Yes.
really see. Yeah, I think that's amazing too, as well as like from a low fidelity perspective, to bring that pink and that yellow and the blue and the green over into your sketches. It really shows, especially in a client situation, how the work that you did together with them, how it transitions into those screens. And have you found that like once you do show them screens and you're reviewing screens, that it goes a little bit smoother?
Oh, absolutely. So I try to, even when we're doing those like nested, I'm sorry, the NetFlow, I'll bring in and start to fill in some stuff. Like here's the title and I have it in yellow. You know, here's some metadata in it because I just know like they're gonna, the more they, I like to think the more that they're exposed to it, the more it's gonna just click throughout the week. And it usually does. Like once we get to the end, even if I'm using all the colors in it, they can see, oh, that's a page and this is what makes up the page. So I found that to be successful. I'll keep doing that.
So, what do you think with this workshop that we have coming up, this sprint that we have coming up, where we are going to actually be on the hook to deliver a clickable prototype? I haven't done that actually in a while. Most of the time, my deliverable is the object map. But now it's like, ooh, can't just check out. Like, I feel like what's going to be really important. I mean, I was thinking like the nav flow, like really getting like almost like approval on the nav flow. Like, is this because this is going to turn into the thing? This is how the thing is going to be nav because it is this. And then, and not only the object map, but the prioritization in the object map. Like, what else is going to be
Absolutely.
really important?
I would be curious if, so we didn't talk about this with calls to action, but sometimes there are just these like nuanced workflows that don't fit into, like I can put them as a placeholder on the CTA, but when you get into prototyping, it's like, okay, what are the steps and what do I need to do? So depending on, I'm very curious if they'll have anything like that. If it's more of a tool, like an information heavy website usually doesn't have a lot like that. It'll be the resource page and you can filter and find things or search. But if there's a process or like creating an invoice, right, was one of them. And it's like, okay, you need to go through the creation process. There's a form, you have to fill out all those things. So oftentimes then I'm prototyping that form out and then getting feedback on those attributes because it's in the main user is going to be doing that. It's not on just the CMS side. Yeah.
Right. Like identifying, it's probably going to be like one or two of those like keystone interactions. And even think about the prioritization of like how do the different attributes in the object map to that interaction flow? It's probably a create flow.
Yep.
Create new appointment, something like that. There's probably going to be an appointment
Yes.
object, and then there's going to be the ability to book an appointment. Okay, how do people want to book an appointment? Do you do it like I was booking a vacation recently, and oh my gosh, I did the time Diamond Resorts timeshare like 2019 or something. Nobody ever do a timeshare. Anyway, meta tip, maybe the most important thing you learn. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do a timeshare. But they had this really interesting way of you could either book it by finding a destination. So here's the time that I want to travel. Here's all the destinations. Or you could pivot and you could say, here's the destination. What are all the times we're going to that destination? And it's the one thing that they do right on this terrible, terrible website, but they do that right. So that's the kind of thing, like, to know that and to know somebody, if somebody is booking an appointment, is it a type of appointment that they want to book? Show me all the times. Or is it like, here's when I can book and I need you to tell me what's available? Or like the doctor, right? Like, I don't care which doctor, this is the time. Or versus, I don't care which time, I just want this doctor.
Exactly. So thinking through those contexts for those interactions, that, yeah, is something that will come out with prototyping. But
Yep. Okay. Two more things I want to talk about real quick. Okay. Before I let you go, because I know we could like keep going for another hour or something. What we did at the end of the LDS workshop, where we, again, for everybody to visualize, we had 8 different object maps in the room. Okay. Many of those object maps had overlapping objects. And so what Allie did is she like looked at the groups that had the most overlapping and basically paired them up. And so I need to, for y'all listening, kind of just like close your eyes and visualize this. What happened is we had group A and group B, object map A and object map B that were paired together. And let's say that they had 3 overlapping objects, but they each had 2 unique objects. So group A would take their 2 unique objects and trot, trot, trot over to group B and then figure out how they might nest. Basically just creating the rows in the nested object matrix. And then group B would take their 2 unique objects and trot, trot, trot across the room to group A and see if they can nest their objects. And what we ended up with is this kind of like connective tissue across the room, this like, like esoteric connective tissue between these, where they started seeing how these object maps kind of like linked together. How can you see that like playing out in the real world, or playing out in any of the workshops you run with kind of like a smaller group of people, where you are working on what, I guess if you're working on 1-on-1 object map, that wouldn't work, but like, how might we build on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think about a future of, if I can do an object, like try to understand. So sometimes when I'm doing a sprint, it's just to really understand what are all of the things, like a full just discovery. And then I would be thinking, how cool would it be to break those up and then say, okay, this actual sprint, like a development sprint, we're going to take those 4 objects and really define them, and then take another 4 and then bring them together. Like, especially if it's I'm waiting for this, but like an organization that has definitely different siloed groups of their organization or to their business, different product teams, like that's where I think it'd be really powerful. So have this one product team that has an app in a company focusing on 1 object map, and then have another object team and like then bringing them together. So doing 2 different sprints with those different groups, different workshops, and then bringing them together for a big workshop and seeing, okay, how does this kind of fit in your, I don't know if Autodesk kind of turned into that.
Yeah, that is kind of what happened. Yeah, but it was a little bit less intentional because we were still learning, but it was like, let's do our core objects, and then let's do another workshop just on this one theme, and another one just on this one theme. And then it was like figuring out how they nest together. But yeah.
It's almost like we need a term for, there's different types of workshops in this. There's different types of Orca sprints. It's like the domain level, or it's like a product specific. And maybe you need to first do the bigger domain level one, get all those main objects down foundationally, and then kind of narrow in. Because there were some that we just could not get to, and they weren't a priority, and that was okay. But if you're building out, like we're doing a whole new piece of software, it's going to be 2 years of building this out. We do eventually need to get to those ones that we put on the back burner to make this system work. We just did not, they weren't a priority. They weren't the core piece of the system.
I wonder if you could do something, I just thought of this, where like you have your core objects that get workshopped, but you're keeping the 5 to 6 objects that like didn't make it, did they didn't make the cut of that core group, but you know they have to be objects. Like the system isn't going to work without these objects. And you just bring them in at the end of the workshop and just do another nested object matrix. Not another, but you just build on your nested object matrix and you just say, okay, we're not going to have columns for these, but these were the 5 to 6 that we said we cannot create the system without these. Let's just try to nest them in the objects that we've got all this like really nice definition on. And then your follow-up workshop, like you kind of can start seeing, like we saw how objects in the LDS workshop, we saw the objects that were the most important based on how much they ended up nesting in other object, you know, the other object maps, like core belief, like, oh, goes there, it goes there, it goes there, it goes there, versus another object might be more isolated. Yeah.
That's vital. No, I mean it, I think that would have helped because I definitely, so that invoicing software that I was working on, I backburnered a lot of objects and said, we'll get to those later. They're vital. And now I wish I did that at the end because we're picking up months later. This is maybe 6, 7 months later. And they have they influence the other ones that we've already built out. So it would have been worthwhile to go and figure out at least nested object matrix, figuring that out, the relationships
Yes.
between them,
And
I think would be powerful. I like
even
that.
when you're prototyping it, you can just black box them. You can just be like, okay, we know that on this screen, like this other thing is going to have to go in, but we don't know much about this other thing. Like we haven't defined this other thing. It literally is a black box. But we know it needs to show up on this page. We know that people need to navigate to instances of that thing. And then that makes that next workshop, you can start seeing like, okay, this one is like of our 10 core objects, this other nested object is nesting in 7 of them. It's showing up. It's like, definitely we need to workshop this one next because it's a bigger black box. It's a black box that's showing up in more places.
Yeah, it's
We
almost
might
like,
bring that in with our healthcare.
yeah, I'm wondering if once we have all those objects after day one, we see if we can draw little circles around which ones are like similar, which ones are in a group together. Like, can we see that, starting to see that yet? Because we could do that after we did that, you know, after going through LDSs and seeing them bring them all together. Like you said, you can see the relationships kind of groups. Like these ones all relate to each other, but this one never relates really to that one.
Yeah, I
And
mean, with
is
the
that like the
prioritization,
themes? Yeah.
yeah, the themes, but also like the prioritization is not just like what are we going to be working on right now, but building a little bit of a roadmap for future sprints. Like, if that would be amazing for like the t end of Monday, you know, you not only have like, okay, these are the ones we're going to bring back in this workshop and just test and see how it nests in. And here's some other areas like, this is what y'all's next workshop needs to be. This is what your next workshop needs to be. And then those next workshops, you kind of can hit the ground running a little bit better because you also have this other object map. Yeah. Okay. So, what last question for you? What companies or teams or groups, like, what is the context where a sprint like this makes the most sense? Like, what problems are they dealing with? What's going on with the team? Yeah, what's the, what context should people be like, this is what I'm exactly what I'm dealing with. I probably need to run an Orca sprint.
Oh my goodness. I love this question. So this last one I just did was an information heavy website in a, they could not, it, they had such a hard time explaining what they did and had a lot of inside terminology in the organization that they knew their audiences did not understand. A lot of acronyms, you know, a lot of different just terms that just weren't clear. And they also are in an area that has multiple different languages. So in Texas, they need to support, you know, Spanish speaking, English, like they had a lot of different resources for many different groups in different languages. So if you have that, like you having a term like a one of their terms was a promising practice. What is a promising practice if you translate that? So I'm realizing the power, especially that object round, is if you have a group that if your organization isn't on the same page about what the things mean and how they relate to one another, and you have like information that you're providing, that's really helpful. On the flip side, though, like having just a complex, how do these things interact with each other, tool, I like to consider them either like a website kind of information heavy or a tool that I'm interacting with and doing a lot. Maybe it's giving me a lot of information. Like that's also a really powerful way for this because you're also understanding how they relate. And that's where the calls to actions are really come in a lot.
Yep.
I don't
Yeah. Yeah. If you're dealing with a
know.
lot of
Everyone.
complexity, everybody, everybody. And then when it comes to timing, is it like, I mean, I like to say, you've done a certain amount of research, you have a certain understanding of like what it is you're actually trying to do. But you haven't started designing screens yet. Like ideally, that's where you're placing this. But also like if you've already started designing screens, it's like it's better late than never. Like just do it. It's gonna be better. You
Yes.
know, you it might end up with rework, but you're gonna have less rework because you will see where you've maybe gone wrong with the screens. And also, if you don't have any research, if you have no idea what problem to solve next, do this for your domain and you can help identify areas for problem solving, I think.
Absolutely. I've definitely did different flavors of that. This last one we did interviews beforehand and actually saved some user interviews for after based on what we might find. And we agreed, me and my colleague Amanda were like, yes, let's do that again, like interviews beforehand to gain that context knowledge and also to provide, be able to join the conversation too of like, actually, we heard that that's not important. And this is what we've been hearing from it. So, because they didn't have someone research based in their company that was doing user research at all. So that was important. But on the flip side, yeah, I've definitely done them when there's no research. It's just the stakeholders and their ideas and like thoughts about
Yeah.
and yeah, then we go, okay, let's go test that. Let's go
Yeah,
find that out.
exactly. And figure out where you need to do more research through this. You literally, you just fight to figure out all your blind spots. So, this has been awesome. We will be, for everybody listening, we will be posting this, of course, all the places, but we will also be posting this to the OUX forum. You can go to forum.oux.com. If you are not already a member, it's totally free. And go to the bulletin board for when we post this, and you can ask us questions and we can talk about this. And we can even talk about maybe the possibility that Allie and I are dreaming about doing some sort of train the facilitator, train the trainer workshop if you're interested in running these sprints at your company or as a consultant. That would be a great place to let us know that you want that. So I don't have a specific URL. We'll put the URL will be in the show notes for that. But you can go to OU, what's the URL? Forum.oux.com. Sign up there, go to the bulletin board. You'll see this posted, and then you can put your thoughts, your questions in the comments. And Allie and I will be hanging out there to continue the conversation.
Yes, I love this, Sophia. This is wonderful. Love chatting with you about this.
I love this too. All right. Well, y'all have a great day. Allie, mwah. And
Mwah.
yeah, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!